Okay, so Parshas Ki Tisa, it's good to have a story. This is a story we have not done much of. It's a story of the end of the Parsha, not Chet Ha'egel, but what happens at the very end. I want to share with you an idea by Rav Bernard Berzon. If anybody knows Rav Azaria Berzon from Mevaseret Chalavim, MNY, or any of the other schools that he was attached to, so this is his father. His father wrote a sefer in English in like the 50s or 60s, and Rav Berzon translated it to Hebrew. It's not often that it happens that way. Usually it goes the other way, but that's what he spent a lot of time doing. I have the English version. It reads much quicker.
Brilliant.
Berzon wrote the sefer, the son or the father?
The father wrote the sefer in English in like the 50s or 60s, and the son in the 80s or 90s, decided that he wanted to translate into Hebrew. It's probably one of the few times that that happens. Usually it goes the other way. So I have the English book. I think I bought it on Amazon because it's not easy to find.
It's in his shir.
Oh, and Rav Azaria Berzon's shir?
Yeah, I was in both. Sorry, and Rav Yedidia also. I switched.
Gotcha. Okay, well, they're much harder to understand, both of them, than the father.
They're really intense minds.
That is definitely true. So this is a creative thought by Rav Bernard Berzon. So the parsha ends. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, k'tav lecha at ha'dvarim ha'ela, ki al pi ha'dvarim ha'ela karati itcha brit ve'et Yisrael. So Hashem says to Moshe, write all these things down, because these are the things that create the brit, the bris, the covenant between you and between me and the Jewish people. So Moshe says or the Torah tells us that Moshe was with God for 40 days and 40 nights, and he did not eat any bread or water. And he wrote the Luchot, the Aseret HaDvarim. So obviously this is something that is physically impossible. You can't live for 40 days without eating or drinking, but it's the miraculous nature of the way things were that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to be sustained by God's presence rather than food for 40 days and 40 nights. Vahi beredet Moshe mehar Sinai, yushne luchot ha'idu b'yad Moshe, b'ritom nahar, Moshe lo yada, ki karan or pana b'dabro ito. When Moshe comes down from Har Sinai with the Luchot, this is the second set of Luchot, not the first set of Luchot. So he's holding them as he comes down from the mountain. And Moshe did not know ki karan or panav, that his face was radiant in light, b'dabroito, when he spoke, b'dabroito, when he spoke to him, to God. So a couple of things. First off, this is the source for why Jews have, why it's known that Jews have horns. Kikaran or panav, right, is a mistranslation. It is certainly not what it means. Rashi tells us lashon karnaim shel or mafhiku bole kimin karen. It's the from the language of light or rays. There were rays coming out from him. But Rashi also does point out that this shows how far the Jewish people had fallen. That prior to Chet Ha'egel, they were able to hear God and see Matan Torah, and nothing scared them at all. And now, all of a sudden, Moshe comes down, and he's got a little bit of light on his face, and everybody is very, very, very nervous. So the first question to try to figure out is, what exactly is this Keren Or that we're talking about? And we'll offer four different possibilities in a little bit. Vayar Aharon, v'chol b'nei Yisrael. So Aaron sees and all Bnei Yisrael at Moshe, v'hinei karan or panav, that his face lit up, v'yiru migeshet elav, and they were afraid to come close to him. So again, this is how far the Jewish people have fallen. V'ikra aleihem Moshe,
you said that this is how far they've fallen, but they were afraid after hearing Hashem do the first two Dvarim last time, so they were afraid then.
Right, but that's, you're talking about like something, like hearing God and the thunder and lightning and everything else, as opposed to seeing a little bit of light coming off Moshe's face. It seems to be like, categorically different. I don't know. It's like, you know, when your kid is afraid that they hear a car backfiring, like on the street, and then, you know, that's different than, I don't know, when you hear actual gunshots. Like, you're talking about like a pretty like broad range, and that's where the Jewish people seem to like go lahavdil. Okay, by Crowley and Moshe calls them by Yeshua Lava Romachonasim by David, they're Moshe Layam. So Moshe calls them back and they come back, Aaron and the Nesiim, and Moshe speaks to them. Afterwards, the Jewish people would come and speak to Moshe. They'd approach, and he would then share everything that God had told him on Har Sinai. This is the source that first the leadership had learned it, and then eventually the people learned it. So the leadership had more opportunities to learn it than everybody else. Okay, Pasuk Lamed Gimel Vayichal Moshe Medaber Itam Yiten Al Panav Masveh. Moshe finished speaking to them, and he put upon his face a masveh, a covering. And when Moshe would come to back to God, so he would take off this masveh as well. And then he would come out and speak to the Bnei Yisrael everything God had commanded him. And then after it seems like the Jewish people would then see Moshe's face radiant, and he would put back on this covering, this veil, until he went back to speak to God. So at least the way it appears is Moshe Rabbeinu wore the veil for what times? Right? When did Moshe actually have the veil on? Anybody?
When he was speaking to Bnei Israel, directly to them.
Okay, anybody agree or disagree with Greg?
It sounds like that's reasonable. Whenever he would be seen by the people who were afraid of him, he'd cover his face. Sounds like a mask.
Okay. And that's what I always thought. But then I read the Psukim carefully last night, and it bothered me, because if you look at Lamed Gimel, so Vaychal Moshe Medaber Itam, when Moshe finished speaking to them, Eitan Al Panav Masveh, he put on the veil. When he spoke to God, he would take off the veil until he was done speaking to God. He came out and would talk to the Jewish people and tell them everything that they were commanded. And the Jews would see that Moshe's face was radiant. And then Moshe would put it back on until he was ready to speak to Ito. What's Ito? With him. Who's him?
So it's reversed.
And it seems to be Hashem.
When he spoke to Hashem, he had it off when he spoke to them, which seems counterintuitive.
Well, he had it off when he spoke to Hashem because that would not be respectful, but it seems like he then would keep it off until he was done speaking to the Jewish people. And then when he was done speaking to the Jewish people, meaning when he was finished sharing the Torah with them, he would then put the veil on.
So he wore it during his commute?
Basically, right? I'm saying like this,
Okay.
Which I hear what you're saying is counterintuitive, David, because if the whole purpose of wearing the veil was that the Jewish people were afraid, then by not wearing it when you're talking to them makes no sense.
Is that what the pasuk says? Does the pasuk tell us why he wore it?
So,
or in two different places, it says he wore it, and separately they were afraid.
So where did it say that they were afraid? By your umigeshet elav pasuk lamed, they were afraid to approach him. So what happens? Moshe then you skip ahead to Lamed Gimel, Vaychal Moshe. When Moshe was done speaking, he put on the masveh. And then when he spoke to God, he took off the masveh. And then he would come out and speak directly, meaning he went from God to the people, and then he would speak to them, and they would see that his face was Karan or Pnei Moshe, that Moshe's face was radiant, Pasuk Lamed Hey, and then he would put it back on. So it seems like whenever Moshe was talking with God or Torah to the Jewish people, he had no veil on, but he would veil himself afterwards.
So it's clear that it doesn't say why he wore the veil.
I mean, other than Vayiru Migesh Elav.
It says when, but not why.
Well, back at the beginning, it tells us that the Jewish people were afraid of him because his face was radiant. And then all of a sudden, we're told that we introduced the veil. So yeah, I guess we
you're using correlation and causation as the same thing. That's not necessarily the case.
Right, but that's again all I could certainly say that all my life, I thought exactly what Greg said, which was why like last night when I was sitting here with these psukim, I was really really upset because like it didn't make any sense. So I was like,
yeah, but we also know the brothers didn't sell Yosef, so we're over it.
So well, actually, it's saying when he spoke to Aaron and the leaders, so when. Didn't it say that he would teach the leaders and the leaders would teach B'nai Israel? It was a two-step process. So maybe that's what they're talking about.
But
maybe
but
when he was talking to Aaron and the leaders, he had the mask on.
Right.
Once he finished with the leaders, he stopped, he put it back on in front of B'nai Israel.
Uh-huh.
The cloth.
But that's like Lamed Aleph, Lamed Bet. Then Lamed Dalid says, when V'diber el b'nei Yisrael yitashir yitzuveh, he would speak to all of b'nei Yisrael.
It sounds like the exact same situations. He's giving two different answers. That's a kind of
yeah. No, they're very hard psukim, and that's like I think I spent more time last night struggling with like the reading of these psukim, and they're not hard to translate, but like. To concretize where, like, what the situation is not simple. It's funny, last Shabbos, I don't remember what the rabbi said in shul, but whatever, he said something, and then, like, it's not an interactive drasha, like most drashas are, but someone, like, piped up something, and he goes, in Hebrew, I don't remember the exact language, but it was something like, Od pam shavaret ganenet, like another time that you destroyed the nursery teacher. But I think a lot of these things are like we learn it at a younger age, and we kind of like hear the story, but then like all of a sudden we read it again. We're like the psukim just don't seem to match that way, and it really like bothered me. I think the last source I looked at was the Art Scroll English translation in the Sfarno. It was the easiest, most accessible English to me. And like, because I was like, Lidaberito, what's going on? I was like, okay, Lidaberito is God. So then you have to work everything backwards. But it seems like the Masveh was really there only when he wasn't talking or teaching. So how does that help if the people fear him? But again, David's point is like, that's, you're taking a jump in assuming that Vayiru Migesh Eilav therefore equates with the need for the mask. Okay, so
it also seems like there's a difference between the first time and the recurrences later.
Right, which maybe is like initially there's the shock that, oh my God, Moshe's face is lit up, and then later on, it's not. So, I mean, here's a thought that I had. I don't know if this is 100% true or not, but we've all seen this, right? Let's say, I think they do this sometimes at the Young Israel, but I'm not positive. If there's like a something downstairs in the Simcha room, which has an Aron Kodesh, so sometimes they'll put something in front of the Aron Kodesh to like block it. It's like a little bit of kavod. I don't think it always happens. So when I was growing up in the Young Israel Jamaica States, originally the shul was like very space, was very tight on space. They then did construction and now have like far more space than they probably do need anymore. But we ran like a couple youth events a year in the main shul. So one of the youth events that we ran was Let's Make a Deal. It is not by any way a Jewish type event. So the rabbi had us put something in front of the Aron Kodesh. So there was like a little bit of a separation. So perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu is sort of like the Aron Kodesh. And so Ki Karanu Panav, when he's teaching Torah, the Torah is open, the Aron Kodesh is open, it's fine. But when it's not, so you have to cover the Aron Kodesh in such a way that it's respectful. That's a possibility.
That's fine, except that it makes it clear that it has nothing to do with the fear factor.
Right. So, yeah. So that's, we're going to have to try to see if any of our answers today help us.
It have to be longer. Fear. I mean, could just be a matter of a certain amount of intensity that they couldn't handle, you know?
Right. Maybe we can change fear to reverence, and maybe that changes it a little bit. And, you know, Yira is fear of God, but it's also reverence of God. I'm not sure.
It's every time he went to speak, he uncovered, he, so to speak, recharged, came back out, and was more radiant again.
Right. No, it could be. I think that for me, certainly, this one is going to be about more questions than answers.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But it was, I did not expect that so much would come of it, especially because Rabbi Berzon's article is about 5 pages long. It's mainly like a drasha. So it's like he tells a few stories, none of them that I used or anything. This is literally the last 2 paragraphs. It's not even a full page. And yet it, I don't know, raised a lot of questions. So let's start with our first question. What is the Keren Or? I want to share with you 4 answers. You'll tell me afterwards if you think that this was helpful, that I changed fonts so that we don't bleed one font into the other, and you can actually see when we change Mefarshim. I did this for my sake, but I don't know. You could tell me if you like it, don't like it, or doesn't matter. So Rashi,
I like it already.
So Rashi says, "Mehechan zacha Moshe lekarnei ahod." Where does Moshe get this like radiance from? Rabotenu amru min ha-me'ara. So the rabbis say it came from the cave. Where's the cave? So it's one of the really short aliyahs, either Shlishi or Revi'i, where Moshe goes into the cave, he sees God and says a sakoti a kapi, that Hashem passes by. Hashem puts his hand in front of Moshe's face, and it says that varita et veloraita et panai, you can't see my face. Veraita dachorai, that was more of a summary, not an exact recounting of the psukim, but you'll see the back of my head, not the front, whatever that means. So when God touched Moshe's face, he left an imprint. He left a little bit of a shine on him. Okay, so that's Rashi's answer. Certainly is not, I don't think it has to necessarily not be pshat, because we know that it seems pretty clear that God is touching Moshe's face, and there has to be some sort of impact on that. The Ibn Ezra is awesome, this Ibn Ezra, because as I read it, I really wasn't sure what it meant. It took me a couple readings and a Google search to understand what it meant. And then I gave it to Ariella, who was sitting next to me, and she read it, and she's like, this is like wild stuff. Like, it's a little crazy. And I was like, it's amazing, because I remember asking Rabbi Kelmer Zatzal a question once about the Ibn Ezra, and he summed up the Ibn Ezra as he was a maverick. And I was like, okay. But when you see things like this, you see that the Ibn Ezra definitely was not one to mince words. This is not a pshat. He's giving this pshat as a rejection of it. His other pshat is much more similar to Rashi. It's his face was radiant. But the Ibn Ezra says, Yishtakhu atzmot chivi haposheya. The bones of chivi the sinner should, be crushed. So who's chivi haposheya? That is not, the parentheses is not the Ibn Ezra. I had to do a Google search. I had no idea who it was. So I looked it up. He was a Karai Bizman Rasag. He was a Karaite Jew who lived in the times of Rav Sadia Gaon. So he predated Rashi and the Ibn Ezra by, 100 years, 200 years, something like that. So he says that the bones of Chivi HaPosheya, who was clearly dead now for a time, they should be crushed up. Shamar ki bavur shalo alechem shavu panav Moshe yiveshot, kmo hakeren v'tam v'yiru. He said that Moshe Rabbeinu's face, because he hadn't eaten bread for 40 days, they came back, he looked like your great-grandmother or your grandmother with like the dried-up, pruny-looking face. And he looked like a keren. He looked like a horn. So think about like the a shofar. Right? If you've ever done the shofar factory from Chabad, not where you buy it at the Judaica store where it's polished and smooth and shiny, but a regular shofar is not lumpy, it's like all bumpy and really like nasty looking. And that's the reason why they were afraid. That is what Chivi HaPosheya says. Mipnei shayu panav mechuarot. They were afraid because he was ugly looking. That's what caught me when I saw those words. Mipnei shayu panav mechuarot, that his face was ugly. I was like, whoa. I think I stumbled upon like a wild pshat by the Ibn Ezra. Little did I know that the only reason I would quote it is because his language is awesome. So then he says, how did this cursed one not open up his eyes? He really thought that this was the thing that did them in. Now, I think that this is a question, and I think he's saying, but I could be reading it wrong, that there's no person that saw a dead person and wasn't afraid to come near him. He's saying, like, why is this such a big deal? So if that's the case, if he was really so scary looking, lama lo hayat tamid amasvel panav, why didn't he keep the masve on his face at all times when he was among the people? Lama hayat masiroto tamid bedabroim im yisrael, why did he constantly take it off when he was in front of the Jewish people? I think that that's like a significant thing. If Moshe Rabbeinu really was so scary looking and it was so terrifying, then the people would constantly be terrified, leave it on. Now, the answer you could give to that is people do get used to it, right? We see people that are deformed looking, and the first time it's really, really hard to see them. But if we see them on a regular basis, all of a sudden, it's not such a big deal. If the Gemara talks about a Kohen that has some like physical deformity, can he dochen or not? So the answer is that if everybody gets used to it, then they're like, okay, this is not such a big deal. Okay, so one eye is bigger than another. Oh, so he looks like, you know, Chunk from the Goonies. Okay, like that's fine. Like we're okay with that so long as we're used to it. But okay, at least initially, why would Moshe Rabbeinu do that? So he rejects this. And then he says, Valo ra'aki bioto ben me'ave sim shana lo ka'atai no lunas lecho vavki kasher ya ben. He goes, also, Moshe Rabbeinu had perfect looking, he looked perfect when he was 80 years old, no, 120 years old. At death, he had no signs of old age at all. So why would it be that at 80, there was a concern? So he outright rejects it. The Sfarno actually does point out, it's not in the Makoros, but it's a beautiful explanation. The Sfarno says, why did Moshe have his face uncovered when he taught, as opposed to when he just was commuting, as David said? So the Sfarno says, Mishum vayu reinecha ro'ot et morecha. The Pasuk says that your eyes have to see your teacher. Right? This is why when you're Zooming, you should not have your screen off if you're the teacher, because your students have to see your face. So if Moshe Rabbeinu had the masveh in front of him, so that would not have worked. He could not have been teaching. Okay, so that is the Ibn Ezra. Okay, it's a great comment. The Archaim says, "Bered Moshe Mehar Perush Kibioto Bahar Lo Yesh Yargish Behod Panav Yitla Davar." So he says that his face had already lit up when he was on the mountain. Kiafiku Panav Meor Panei Kel Hamidbar Hamidaberi Moreh Tov Nahar Nisalek Tliat Hargashad Or Panav Vadayin Tikshe Lama Lo Yargish Meshach Yiridato. Moshe Rabbeinu, this is not from having God touch his face, but rather this is from God, from having spoken to God for all this time. Lahavdil. If someone spends like time like with radioactive substances, at least in the movies, what happens afterwards? Right? Their face is like glowing. Right? So it's the same thing. If you're speaking Lahavdil to God for 40 days, it's going to have its impact. So when he comes down, his face is shiny. And he doesn't realize it. Why? Because he's not looking in the mirror. He's not seeing himself, but the people see it and they're like, whoa, what happened? Okay, so I guess the radioactive example is not a great one because, at least in the movies, eventually that does wear off, whereas this seems to be there forever. Okay, so we have Rashi's explanation that it comes from the Sakotia Kapi, that God's hand touches him. Or Chaim says it comes from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu had been in close contact with the Shekhinah for 40 days. Now we'll share the Chizkuni, last possibility. So Chizkuni says, Moshe liyadaki karan or panav, kishnatana kosh baruch hod yado, al pi amera shayaba Moshe kidichtiv, vayaba vork vodiv, samticha bin grata tzur, v'sakoti kapialecha adavri. Sounds a lot like who? Right. Which pshat does the Chizkuni sound like? Okay, I saw Mati's lips saying Rashi, who's muted. Yeah, it sounds a lot like Rashi. Uktiv Vayevor Hashem Panav Moshe Zacha LeKarnei Ahod Masha Zacha BeLuchod Achronot Lo Rishon Haynu Al Yedei Sharishono Natnu LaEin Kol BeReimim VeKolo VeEish VeEil Uktiv Gam Ish Al Yirabuchal LaHar. So the question is what that the Chizkuni is addressing is why did he get this on the second set and not on the first set? So he says the first set came with all of the lights and the noises and everything, and the second set came with a much quieter, more tsanua way. Ilule karne hahod hayu pitchon pelu mot lomar lo natnu luchot acherot velo hayu maminim shenatun lakosh baruch hu. So why does God put his karne hod on Moshe for the second one? Because with all that happened by the first luchot, no one would question that that was actually an encounter with God, right? Assuming that you believe in the Torah, you're going to say that I believe that what happened. Is reported as accurate. So the fact that millions of people saw this is proof to me that it actually came from God. But the second time, Moshe Rabbeinu disappeared for 40 days and he comes back and we don't see anything on top of the mountain. There's no thunder, lightning or anything. People could easily have said, wow, I don't think this came from God. So therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down with his face shining, everybody was like, oh, that could have only happened if you had been in close contact with God. Davar acher, lefi sheratzu lamid lahem manhig makom Moshe, harei lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu shehu malei miziv shechinato al piv, vein lamid acher makomo. So Chizkuni is probably bothered by the fact that his first pshat, at least in my mind, has a big question on it. And the big question is, if you believe in the authenticity of the Torah, then if the Torah says that the luchot the first luchot were brought down from God, why do you need all of the pomp and circumstance to be the belief that it actually happened that way? It says that it came from God. The second one said it came from God. So therefore, they both came from God. And like we can close up shop on that one. So he offers a second explanation, which is that people wanted to replace Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so they wanted to replace Moshe Rabbeinu. That is... that makes no sense. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts his Shechina on Moshe Rabbeinu and says, this is who you wanted to fire? Like, you were getting ready to replace him? Who are you going to find ever that's, you know, similar to him? And therefore, in l'hachamid, al-cher b'mkomo, therefore, do not get rid of anybody, do not get rid of him, do not replace him. It does not make any sense. I'll share with you, I posted this Dvar Torah yesterday, but it's a good one. So the Magid of Dubno asks, why did Moshe Rabbeinu say Mecheni Amisifra Chasher Katavta, erase me from the book after the first Luchos and Cheta Egel? So it's a similar answer to this, but it comes from the opposite perspective. God is saying here that you have to keep Moshe Rabbeinu, don't get rid of him. But Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to God, why would you, you know, why? He's answering why you have to get rid of me. So the Dubno Magid tells a mashal where there was this king, and this king had a friend who was his closest advisor, and the advisor had a friend who was incredibly dishonest and was constantly getting in trouble with the law. And every time he got in trouble with the law, what would happen? He would say, but my best friend is the advisor to the king. And they would always have to let him off the hook, because what were they supposed to do? Except one time he did something that was so egregious that they couldn't look the other way even when he said that. So it comes to the king, and the king turns to his advisor and says, what should I do about this guy? So the advisor says, I'll tell you, it's very simple. Fire me. If you fire me, you might let him off the hook now, but he'll never, ever, ever sin again, because he'll know that he doesn't have me as his as backup. So according to the Dubno Magid, the reason, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu says, God, get rid of me, and if you get rid of me, the Jewish people will stop sinning. Here, the Chizkuni is saying the opposite. He's saying, God is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, they wanted to get rid of you, and I'm going to, you know, put upon you a mark that shows what? That you're not going to be gotten rid of at all. So, again, these are all nice ideas of why Moshe Rabbeinu's face lit up. I'll share with you a fifth possible reason why Moshe Rabbeinu's face lit up. And I think, to me, it's the most interesting and possibly the answer that I like the most. So the Yalkut Shimoni in Perek Tuf Zayin 407 says the following. Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachman Amar, Kishamosha Katav the Torah, Nishtair Bakulmos Kima, when Moshe Rabbeinu was writing the Torah, there was a little bit of ink left in his quill. They viru al rosho, and he put it on his forehead. Umisham nasu al karnei hahod, and that's where the hor. This is where the radiant light came from. What does that medrash mean? God gave him the ink and said, "Write a Torah." Don't you think God gave him exactly the right amount of ink? And if God gave him the right exact right amount of ink, because God knows how much ink he's going to need, why would there be any leftover ink? So of course, you could just say this is just a medrash, and it doesn't bother me at all, which is totally fine. But there's a couple possible answers as to where the extra ink came from. So the first answer is an answer I found online from Rabbi Haber, who lives here in Ramat Beit Shemesh apparently, and has a shul, and gives drashos, and someone writes them up. So this is his first answer in the name of the Baal HaTurim. The Baal HaTurim quotes the pasuk, "Va'ish Moshe anav ma'od mikol adam asher al pnei adama." Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble person on the planet ever. Now, it says anav, ayin, nun, yud, vav. That is how you could spell anav. But if you look in the Torah, anav is spelled ayin, nun, vav. It's spelled chaser without the yud. Okay, so the Baal HaTurim says that Vayish Moshe anav ma'od, Moshe was very humble. How do we know, where do we see that Moshe was humble? If you look at the very first pasuk of the Torah, of Vayikra, when I set up the Makoros, the Aleph was a lot smaller than the rest of the word, but then when I readjusted the fonts, I messed up and it became a normal Aleph. But the first Aleph of Vayikra is a smaller letter. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to say Vayikar, that God speaks to him sort of like by happenstance. So God says, you can write it small, but it's not really small. It's going to be a full Vayikra that you really speak to, that God really speaks to you. So says the Baal HaTurim, when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Vayikra and God agreed to let him write it with a small aleph, originally the plan was a big aleph. So how much ink was left? The difference between a big aleph and a small aleph. That was the ink that he put on his head. Another possible answer is Vayish Moshe Anav Ma'od. Moshe was very humble. He didn't want to write that word. So what did he do? He spelt it Chaser. So if he spelt it Chaser, what happens? There's the extra yud. That is the letter that ended up on his head. A third possibility is Moshe says in Tetzav, Moshe says in Kitisa, Mechenina Masifracha, erase me from your book. So where is he erased from? He's erased from Parshas Tetzaveh. If you look in last week's Parsha, you won't find Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Moshe Rabbeinu's name should have been in that Parsha. If Moshe Rabbeinu's name had been in the Parsha, you would have at least had, instead of Ve'atah Tetzaveh as the first Pasuk would have then been Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Le'emor. And then that's a whole lot of letters that was out, and any possible mentions of Moshe also were no longer in there, and those are all that's the extra ink that should have been. Okay, so those are possible answers. I'll share with you two other answers, and you can decide which of them you like. The second answer is an answer I found by Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rabbi Akiva Eger says Moshe was very humble, and nonetheless, he's the leader of the Jewish people. He's a melech. And the king, we're told in halacha, melech shemacha al kvodo, kvodo eino machol. If a king wants to forgive his honor and say, mochel, it's fine. A rebbe could do that. A parent could do that. A king cannot. A king has to have the grace, the dignity, the crown, the clothing, and all of that stuff. So Moshe puts on a masveh to act mighty, meaning Moshe's putting on a mask. What's the purpose of his mask? His mask is to create the illusion that he's willing to be almighty in everything, but when he's done, he takes off the mask, and that's it. And then he's once again, when he's in the presence of God, he's anav. I guess you would answer the same way that when Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching the Torah to the Jewish people, he was also an anav then, but it was when Moshe was going in his commute and he was walking back and forth in his regular everyday life, he had to give off the countenance of greatness, and that was the masveh. I do think that answer didn't sit well with me last night, but as David was giving me a really hard time about Vayiru Migeshet Elav, which I appreciated, it made me think that perhaps this answer is a better answer than all of the Rishonim, because their answer kind of works with the assumption that they continued to be afraid. But if it's a status symbol that Moshe Rabbeinu always had to convey the royalty of his position, I think that changes it a lot. So, David, I am grateful that you gave pushback, because to me that took an answer that I wrote down last night. I was like, I don't know, I'm not sure I'm really buying it, to an answer that I actually really like. And I'll end with the last answer, and this is the answer of Rav Berzon. Rav Berzon says that there are 50 explanations to the Torah. Right, we know Shivim Panim LaTorah, but there were 50 ways that you can explain the Torah, and Moshe Rabbeinu had written 49 of them. And he got to the 50th one, and he knew that there was 50, but he could not, for the life of him, figure out what the 50th one was. So what did he do? Normally, and Berzon's whole drasha was based on arrogance and how people, if I don't get it, it must be a problem with the system, not a problem with me. That's the way people think. So he said Moshe Rabbeinu could not find the 50th, no matter how hard he tried. And rather than blaming God and the Torah and saying it's their fault, it's a bad book, it doesn't make sense, it has all these inconsistencies, Heviru lo al rosho, he turned the pen to his forehead and he pointed to himself and said, Alai, the reason why the Torah, I can't come up with a 50th explanation, is it's my fault, because I am limited, unlike the Torah and God himself, who are unlimited. And so what Moshe Rabbeinu does is he acknowledges his own limits and he touches his forehead and then says Rav Berzon, that is why Moshe Rabbeinu comes down with this like mark from God to imply or to show everyone his humility, his greatness, his willingness to admit that he was not as great as anybody else, as God, even though he was Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest man alive. And perhaps that's the lesson that he was teaching the Jewish people. Every time he taught Torah, every time they saw his face, what did they see? They saw his intellectual honesty, that despite the fact that he was the greatest and he lived by God, and he could have said, listen, there are only 49. Nobody would have ever known that there were 50. Moshe Rabbeinu's honesty and his willingness to admit that he was limited was the message that the Jewish people needed to see every time. It's interesting because the difference between Rabbi Akiva Eger and Rabbi Berzon is that according to Rabbi Akiva Eger, the Masveh was supposed to be there to show everybody his royalty when he wasn't teaching Torah. But according to Rabbi Berzon, it would come out that the purpose of the Keren Or was that when they were learning Torah with Moshe Rabbeinu, they should see this message. Afterwards, there was no reason. It could be hidden until the next time. Either way, I think it's a lot of different explanations for Keren Or Panav. Still have to spend a little bit more time on our own to try to figure out why this really was, where Vayiru Megeshet Elav plays into it, and why the on and off. So if anyone comes up with more possible explanations, that's great. And if anyone is listening to it by recording afterwards and wants to share in the chat their own insights into what we missed, that certainly is helpful as well. I hope that this was enlightening. It certainly, Moshe Rabbeinu's lit up face certainly was an enlightening story.